Welcome to Sundays with the Modern. In this series, we invite prominent art historians, artists, architects, and curators, and scholars to speak on selected works on view. This is the final Sunday of our spring series. We switched the format for the summer. On the second Sunday of each month, from June until September, at 1 p.m., we will hold summer school, not as bad as it sounds, in which we will explore the fundamentals of the Modern's permanent collection. Led by scholars in art and art history, each self-contained hour-long tour will introduce participants to an art movement exemplified by works on view. The course does not require advance registration and is free with the price of admission to the galleries. You may come to one or all. We begin on June 12th with artist and professor Noah Simbliss speaking on abstract expressionism. Further topics include pop, minimalism, and conceptual art. A further list of speakers, as well as podcasts of previous speakers, is available at themodern.org. Today's speaker, Greg Manser, is a professor in the Department of Film, Television, and Digital Media at TCU, but his work spans many other disciplines. He's a filmmaker, photographer, actor, director, in short, an artist interested in crossing boundaries. You can find out more about Greg and his work at gregmanser.com on the web. That's M-A-N-S-U-R. Greg.
Thank you, Michael. Oh, I'm listening to me. I have an echo. Well, hi. So I'm really not, I don't know if you'd call me a scholar. I'm a full-time professor at TCU, and I am a filmmaker and a printmaker, and I wanted to, when I was invited to come here, I kind of wanted to sort of, I had to really rack my brain about, there's so much you can talk about in art. So I thought what I would do is just to tell you a little bit about myself, and then move you around to different points in the gallery that fit specific topics. I'm not going to kind of give you a broad history of modernism, of modern art, because it's not my field per se, but I do know a lot about it, because when you have to get a master's degree, you have to study art. So I have a lot of information that no one cares about. So this was a great opportunity to come and just talk, because you know, I have lots of opinions, like all of us, so I'll give you my opinions about things for what it's worth. I'm very happily married. That's my wife right there, Nancy. And I teach full-time at TCU filmmaking. Cinematography has been my love, and post-production, which is the editing of it. As a printmaker and as an artist, I'm very interested in the combining of various themes in my work. My thesis when I did my graduate work was on the creation of identity in consumer culture. Who are we? Who am I in the context of the culture I live in? Especially in a culture that's so much about advertising and media and who I'm supposed to be and how I'm supposed to look. I was a kid who moved a lot. So I was always going to a new town and I was always kind of the outsider. And I realized if I could figure out the game of that community, you know, don't wear white socks with black shoes, but wear Argyle socks with loafers or hush puppies, then you could fit in. And so I figured it out. You know, that, so as I got older, I thought, who am I really? And who's that essence of Greg Manser? And how significant am I? Or how insignificant am I? You know, I have my good days and my bad days. And my good days are when I'm not so significant. My bad days are when I'm too significant, right? So if you just follow me, I want to kind of show you a little bit about this building. I've always been, it's an amazing architectural building. Very modern, because it's a modernist building, and it's modern art. And which essentially is defined by the straight lines, the flat surfaces. There's no gilding, no Baroque, not Gothic, it's just clean. So the architecture really fits the art, in a sense. sort of. But it's also very institutional. Could be a bank, in a sense. And I've always been sort of, I guess because as sort of an outsider, I've always been kind of questionable about institutions. And of course, we live in 2011, and institutions are all kind of coming into question, which is kind of the modern process of questioning the system and how it functions. You know, Wall Street, this institution, all that stuff. But the beauty of all of this to me is that you're here because you're interested in asking the questions about who are you and who are we as a culture and what is it all about. And you're willing to do a little bit of homework to come here to sort of dig into what this art's about. And I chose this space because there's really nothing here except this piece. And this piece really helps me sort of start my conversation with you about the idea of who are we? Because we have this, and if you notice, he doesn't quite touch the mirror, but we have a figure representational of us reaching to touch either the glass or more specifically to find and touch himself. And I think this is really where we are in 2010 in the world of art and in the world of sort of an exploration of self, trying to decide how deeply we can get into who we are. The modernists were very interested in coming out of World War I and World War II. You know, so many people were killed, so much horror, so much tragedy. The artists decided to say, what of our deeper senses of self? What's our psychological motivations? What are we hiding from? Where does this darkness come from? So there's this questioning and this probing, and we've got Freud and we've got this new science of psychology, and all of these things are sort of working forward to try to get to it, the truth. And I'm one of these people who really believes there's truth in the world, that there's absolute, concrete truth that needs to be gotten to. Because that's what I need to function as a person. I need to know that there are truths. My work, and this is probably all I want to talk about, is my work. My work takes images, photographs for the most part, like a beach scene, people on the beach. And I'll take a photograph that I've taken of, say, a crucifix, Christ on the cross. Two very powerful symbols. The beach, beach represents sun and vacation, or as they say in England, holiday. And then the Christ figure has all of this, you know, suffering and rebirth and all of that. And I put them together in a photograph. And I did this back in the late 90s when I was living in Minnesota. And I brought it actually to the Museum of Modern Art, the Museum of Art in Minnesota. And the photography curator, he thought I was on some sort of religious mission. But all I was trying to do is take images that didn't belong together and create this conflict so that as an artist, as a viewer, there's this sort of cognitive dissonance when they look at the image. It's not what they think it is. They have to find out what's there and then redefine it in their own head. I'm interested in what goes on with my audience. Aesthetics are important, but I'm interested in that sort of cognitive dissonance, the questioning. What am I looking at? And it's like a piece like this. Really, what is this about? It's a very nice sculpture. It's classic. It's Greek. It's got the toga. Maybe if we turned it, or maybe it shouldn't be facing the mirror, but turning it towards the mirror is sort of turning ourselves inward to question, who are we? Who is he? You know, in the Temple of Delphi, know thyself. And it's an important thing in Western consciousness, know thyself. Turn the question inward. We seem to be at a place in history where some of us are asking the external question, and some of us are asking the internal question. And I know a lot of therapists who are doing really well right now, getting a lot of business, because there are people sort of asking those questions. And I think this is all really good. Okay, so what does that have to do with art? The question that I've discovered when I'm presented with something incredibly complicated, like, why am I here? Who am I? What am I doing with my life? is Friedrich Nietzsche, a German philosopher, said, when you stare into the abyss stares back. When you're presented with something so incredibly overwhelming, it doesn't answer, you have to sort of come to your own sort of conclusion. And it's in that place, in that very volatile place that we have our answers. Without breakthroughs or breakdowns, there's no breakthroughs. And I really believe that this character, this man, he's in a moment of questioning his own sense of purpose or self, or maybe even significance. I don't know. Anyway, that's my first ramble. Anybody have a question about that? Okay. Let's move into, just kind of follow me, and we'll move into the first floor. I love how that's on wheels. That's pretty clever. My apologies to Enzo Kiefer. He's the artist here. I'm probably not going to talk much about his work, but I'm going to talk about this space a little bit. One of the allegories, Greek allegories, is called Plato's Cave. And Plato's Cave is all about how we make things mean things. And human beings love to make meaning out of things, out of everything. And the allegory in Plato's Cave is pretty simple. A man, this is the opening of the cave, a man is strapped. Let's say he's strapped to this, and he can only see what's going on the back wall. Can't move his head, he can't look down at his body. He's just stuck there, and he's there from the beginning of his birth. So his consciousness is completely based on what's behind there. And people walk across, there's shadows moving across the back of the wall, and he has to figure out, what is the meaning of any of this? The allegory is, he's released from his chains, and he turns around, and there you are, watching him. And so his whole existential philosophy of meaning has now been changed, because life isn't just about shadows, it's about flesh and blood and real things. And so when you're looking at art, you come into it with a sort of sense of that man, Plato's cave allegory, with no real background or understanding. And for me, my life has been being released from that chair and going through life and realize how wrong I've been in many ways and how deep knowledge is. And how beautiful and complicated what I thought was sort of simple things. So that's what I love about art. When art forces me to step out of my cave. But sometimes it's really hard because it flies in the face of what I believe in, what I think is true. And sometimes it takes work. This work, for example. I mean, it's what is this? Anybody know what this is? It's a book with wings. It's funny, in a way. But what is it about? Each one of you is going to bring your own meaning to it. And that's beautiful. That's what we do. It means something. You're not going to leave this room and not have some meaning of that. Maybe it's a Bible. And since we didn't have the second coming yesterday, or whatever was supposed to happen, I don't know, what was supposed to happen yesterday? Anyway, it was supposed to be piles of clothes everywhere, right? The rapture. We didn't have the rapture yesterday. So, Could be a Bible, Wings Bible. It's symbolic. It's bringing us to a higher consciousness, salvation. Could be that. It could be the importance of knowledge in our lives, book reading. I think, you know, but there is, but the thing about it is, there's your interpretation, and then there's the artist's intention. And the only way you're going to know what the artist's intention is to Google it or to buy this book. Now, we're selling this book right now at the front desk. Discounted, no, I'm kidding. But seriously, that's the only way you find out the meaning of things, is you have to dig into it. And that's kind of the conundrum of modern art. When you're looking at a Rubens or a Rembrandt or a Vermeer, you kind of got it. When you get into modernist art, you kind of need a guide. I'm not the guide in this case, but I'm offering, but you need a guide. You need somebody who studied art. You need somebody who can write great reviews. You need art historians, because it's not always obvious to the viewer. And I find that a little intimidating. Sometimes I'll come to an art museum, I walk out feeling kind of dumb. Like I'm not smart enough to get it. And there's this, and that's a problem. I think it's a problem with a lot of art, especially modern art. But the other side of it is, because you're here, I can pretty much assume every one of you is an interesting person. Because you're here, you're curious, you're expanding, you're asking questions, you're interested in art. And that's interesting to all of us, right? Because it makes us a better element of our society. It means we're all working towards some greater understanding of who we are, who you are, who society is, and the role of the artist in society as well. Okay. Any questions on this? Oh, really?
It's not there. The knowledge isn't there. It's blank. So that's
something. Well, there you go. Yeah. And, you know, it's all about, from the modernist perspective, it's what it's made out of, and its places, and its positioning, and it's just, you know, there's layers upon layers of meaning. It's like layers of paint. Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. Art since the Enlightenment, and I really believe in this, is a striving towards a universal moral and intellectual self-realization. And I think that's what civilization is trying to do. It's trying to self-realize ourselves before we destroy ourselves. To come to some conclusion or some growth or some maybe just gratitude to the mystery of being alive, I guess. And I think art takes us there. Because art, for me, is a refuge from the world. It's a place to contemplate things. When I was a kid, 19, going insane, as 19-year-olds can do, my girlfriend and I at the time would drive into Boston to go to the Museum of Fine Art just to walk into the Impressionist room. They have a great Impressionist collection. And we'd spend the whole day there just kind of going, whew, you know, whew. There's beauty in the world because it's not out there in the streets of Boston. Not in 1971, you know. So there is that element of art in itself. Okay, let's go and take a look at some of this other work. Again, what do we see? What is this? What do you think this is? And you can, you're welcome to read it. But is this a picture, a photograph, a painting? What do you think it is? What does it look like? A bad photo, kind of blurry, slow shutter speed? It's actually a photograph that was painted as a painting, then re-photographed. So you're looking at a photograph of a painting from a photograph. Layers of stuff. What does that mean? I don't know. It's interesting. I don't really know what it means, except that art is a removal of reality, like one step back. Like if you took a picture of this, that's one step from reality, two steps from reality. Theater is not real, it's just it's one step back from reality. So you said it's like removed, one step removed, two steps removed. So you could say this is like three steps removed from the actual moment when this woman walked down the stairs. So that's kind of a modernist thing. that kind of style. Over here, this is a huge painting of German Enzo Kiefer again, German painter. One of his theses of, as an artist is exploring what it was to be a child from post-World War II and the guilt of being a member of a country whose parents did such horrible things as the Holocaust. And if they didn't exactly do the Holocaust, they certainly knew of it and were aware of it. So this is Kiefer sort of exploring that theme with paint and dirt and clay, and again, you could talk, you know, there's books written on this painting. So nothing I can really add. But again, it's a modernist search for self and search for meaning in a very post, you know, post 20th century world. Come on in here. This is an interesting group of paintings in here. One of the things about painting that I really love is I always think of the cave paintings, and so when I come to an art museum, I always feel like I'm in a cave. A very nice cave, but a cave nonetheless, right? And so I think, you know, cave paintings were all about animals. They didn't paint themselves. There's no portraits of, you know, I think I'll go in and paint my, you know, I'll paint my wife, you know, with, you know, these two, you know, whatever we were, Homo sapiens, you know, walking around with furs on. There's no faces. It's just animals, because we're hunters, and the animals were what kept us alive. It's not till much later when the Egyptians, and you know, and that's, we're talking 35,000 years ago, they were painting the walls. Now the Egyptians come along, and that's only 5,000, 6,000 years ago. Now we're seeing faces. Now we're seeing Kauri. Now the human is becoming much more significant. In fact, the human's becoming divine. The artist is marginalized. We never know who the artists are, but the human is becoming divined. And when I look at the search of the modernists here, and these are all modernist paintings, and these are some of the greatest painters of the modernist period, who are asking this question: who are we? How do we function? Why? What's the inside of us look like? How many layers deep can we get? That wasn't something that the representational painters did when they were painting the walls. They were just painting what they saw. And that's pretty much, you can say that's pretty much what's happening in art, through art history, up until really the modernists, the impressionists. They're just they're breaking away from representation to more impressions of representation in reality. Here, these people are really striving for some deeper internal knowledge of who we are. So if you look at this painting, it's symbolic. And if you read the literature on it and what the artist intended, there's meaning in all of it. But the meaning is really what you bring out of it, what you get. Because you don't have the books. Now, maybe you'll go home and Google it and think, what this, you know, and write his name down and her name down. But part of, for me, what I'm interested more on is what you take away from your day here at the museum. That's what I'm interested in, you know, when I walk away. And we're going to look at some stuff upstairs, down here as well, that answers sort of personal questions and also leaves us sort of staring into the abyss, if you will. This is a terrific painting, a terrific artist. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Francis Bacon, a Londoner. Representational, but he heads an alcoholic, tragic life, died very young, but he left behind a body of work that sort of shows the tortured figure, and I think you've seen a lot of this work. Jackson Pollock, there's a sense of the tortured soul searching for some meaning, searching for truth, searching for some sort of understanding of what it is to be a human being in the 20th century. But it's not always about being tortured. Some of it's just about incredible beauty and lightness. The flow of colors, the movement of colors, kind of darkness and light and shadow. Because when you're searching for a sense of the individual's meaning and being, we live in shadows of dark and light, you know. Luke and Darth Vader and all the things in between. Symbols, allegories. Another Jackson Pollock, somewhat figurative. You're starting to see what look like faces. This is early. This is before he got into his drip paintings. We don't have any drip paintings, do we? No. Jackson Pollock is really the premier blue chip artist right now. He's got a painting called Number 5. I think it's one of his, he started dripping paint. You guys all know about Jackson Pollock. He's had a dripping paint under the canvas back in the 50s. He went from this, from Marx. This is all about Marx and paint and movement and form. He started dripping paint onto canvas, and he created these beautiful canvases. And the last one sold for about $70 million. And that's a whole other thing about modern art. It's intimidating in a sense to think that a painting like this could be worth $20 million. Because it's like, oh, if it's worth $20 million, it must be good. But if I look at it, I'm not saying I don't think this is a good painting, but if I look at it and go, I've just dissed a $20 million painting, and who am I, right? I drive a used car. You know, I'm dissing. I can't, you know. But at the same time, you can. Because, again, it's the relationship that you have. A painting like this, you have to look at. You have to give it time. That's the thing about a lot of art. That's why there's chairs in front of this stuff. You've got to like, be in that space to see. It's like a dance we do. It and us and what kind of comes up. This is another Pollock. Again, abstract expressionism was a big movement in the 30s and 40s and 50s in America. It led up to what we're going to see in the next room. Just come in here for a second. This is a painting by Clifford Still, abstract expressionist. What do you see? What do you feel when you look at this painting? She's got, okay, you have nothing. Anybody have anything? You like the blue. There's a little blue in the upper left-hand corner of the painting. She likes that.
I do feel the jaggedness of it.
You like the jaggedness of it? Oh, it does have a lot of jaggedness of it. Yeah.
I think the black is depth.
You think the black is?
Depth.
Depth. It certainly does. Yeah. As you can imagine, there's a whole pages and pages written on this painting about what it means. It means something. It's saying something. This painter was really interested in the struggle of life and death. So black is death, and white is life, and I guess everything in between. Very parochial description of this painting, by the way. And I'm sure I'm offending Michael Opping and a lot of people, Mark Thistlethwaite as well. But this is his black, metaphoric black angel, or allegorical black angel. But the question is, it's what you take home. It's what you take home that's important. Now, I don't know what this painting's about at all, but I really like it. Because it has that Robert Motherwell behind you over there. And I mean, I like the black and white of it. I like the organicness of it. But I like that. And then I like this. This one feels
hopeful.
Yeah. Hopeful. It feels there's some happiness to it. I feel like I'm in a dialogue with it when I look at it. I don't feel like there's a dialogue here, but I have a dialogue here. It's purely subjective on my part, you know. What do you think of this painting? Do you like this painting?
Of all the paintings in this room, that was the one that But do you feel like you have a dialogue because of the circles?
I don't know. I mean, I would say, see, this is association. There's some Navajo pictographic art, and it's very simple. It's three dots, which I see as eyes, and it's got a big mouth. So it reminds me of this big, happy sort of Navajo pictograph. And maybe this is the mountains. Because what I do when I look at abstract expressionism, I try to find representational forms. You know what I do? It's bad. We're not supposed to. We're supposed to be moved on some higher way, some profound, subtle.
However you interpret it, however it affects you, I think that's how it affects you. If you have to start going by rules, then I think that's kind of against art. You know what I mean? That's my personal opinion.
I'm open to it. I appreciate that. Okay.
I think it's the universe.
You think it's what?
The universe. It's like...
Yeah.
Oh! Is it exploding or dancing? It's not an oblivion. Okay. We're talking about Gottlieb's Apricorn. Yeah, it does. It has, it's like...
Different suns, like sunsets and water. Yeah, water.
Yeah.
Water just, you know, the ocean and rocks.
Yeah, there's a joy and a depth and a playfulness and a serious side, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I got in this room. I'm wired. Everything I say to you is being recorded. I'm up for interpretation on this room. I don't know what to say. The one behind you, I kind of like it because it's like peeking between the curtains of the painting, you know. The Wizard of Oz, who's behind the curtains? In this case, nobody. That's even more terrifying. I kind of want somebody there. I see a question mark. You know, how can I not? I don't know if it's a universal symbol in all languages, but maybe there's no question mark in Chinese. I guess it wouldn't be. I don't know what I'd see if I was Chinese. But my context is so, you know, I'm so European American that that's all I see. You know, red and green, red and blue. Thank you. They're complementary colors. So, actually, red and yellow, red and green. But primary, thank you, darling. So they're primary colors, so they kind of work with each other a little bit. But other than that, I got nothing. So let's move into here. Mike, how quickly should I finish? Oh, really? All right. Okay. All right. I do have a lot to say about this room. This is only a small sampling of the work by Robert Rauschenberg. Rauschenberg is an American artist who came, and the way the gallery is set up is we're moving from that sort of modernist, abstract expressionist into kind of what we call pop culture. Andy Warhol, Marilyn, pop. Rauschenberg, pop. Rauschenberg used a lot of found images in the streets and the gutters. He's done a lot of great work. One of my favorite artists of all time. This isn't really representational in my opinion, because I want to open up the screen door and show you what's behind there, and I can't, because it's, you know, $1 million piece of work and stuff.
We used to do
it. I'm sorry?
When we first got it, we could open the door.
Really?
I guess we wore it down.
Oh, you wore it up.
Anymore.
Did it have a spring on it to shut it?
No,
on
we
back?
Were just allowed to open it.
Wow. And my time has passed. missed my shot.
You're too young.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He just recently passed away, but anyway, he's Rauschenberg, he's a great artist. Not so much, his work, it's funny, his sense of himself isn't in the work as much as his questioning of who am I, why am I here, what do we do, his sort of bigger intellectual questions, and done in a beautiful way. He handles materials wonderfully, wonderful sense of color. He went to Black Mountain College, he did this great dances, he was a dance, he just done everything. This guy is just brilliant. I don't know who this guy is, never heard of him before. we're going to talk about him upstairs, so I'll pass on that. this is Gerhard Richter, painter, modernist, postmodernist, pop, I'm not even sure. His deal is painting photorealistically. He's going to paint the way a photograph will photograph. And we see a lot of that coming up. I don't know what to say about it, really.
You said it about the lady walking down the stairs. I mean, this is not, he didn't photograph it and then paint it. But he photographed that and painted it. This is just painted from a photograph.
Is it? Okay, I don't even know. It's just painted from a photograph, yeah. I don't understand. I mean, there's a whole body of knowledge behind why this is great. I don't know what it is.
Well,
I tell you, it's not even opinion. It's my ignorance. My ignorance.
It has to do with what we understand as knowledge, which is kind of where we are in the world. You know, do I understand that it's photographic? Do I understand that it's the real world?
Oh, that's what. That's it. That's the point of it.
Well.
Oh, I see. Oh.
But isn't that what you're talking about?
Kind of. Yes, you are. You are getting it. Let me see. I'm going to give you. I'm going to make sure. So your attendance, and you're going to get an A. You're working your way up. You're doing very good. You're doing very well. you're a good student. You're a good student. Yeah. A kind of a melding of the old and the new. We have Botticelli's Venus on the Half Shell and bit of boom. A commodification of art, a commodification of Renaissance painting with contemporary commercial images, maybe, maybe not. Obviously, carrying metaphor of shell to shell. Clever, cute, is it art? I don't know. It's illustration to me more than it is art, but again, it depends on, you know, when is it painted? 1963-64, obviously back then, Cold War, maybe there was some significant context to that, I don't know. I do like this one because this is a work that is really made from old pieces of billboards, and I like it because it's sort of natural and organic, and it just sort of happens, and it has form and content, and it's clever and it's interesting. Doesn't really say something, but it talks about change, transition, time. It captures that sense of movement in time, and I like that. I like that when art has the capability of talking about time and things being lost and things. I don't know. I got nothing of that. Another painting. This, of course, we've all seen on Lichtenstein. Subways in New York have a lot of his work now done in tile. He's really quite a accomplished artist. Warhol also did some of this stuff back in the 50s. I don't know who did it first. It's probably up for grabs. But this is a style that Lichtenstein decided to work with his whole life. Warhol kind of went through cycles and just sort of recycled things and then went off in another direction. It's about, what can I say? And this is, I like this. It's cool because it's contemporary, it's modern, it's our lives, it's the tragedy of accidents, and it's kind of a beauty of chrome and white and yellow, and it's all of that. My understanding of pop culture is people were so tired of trying to figure out what abstract expressionism was because it was such this intellectual elitist thing. When all of a sudden you've got a comic book and a picture of Marilyn Monroe and Campbell soup cans, Rauschenberg was doing just Jasper Johns, who I don't know if we have any Jasper Johns here. Jasper Johns was doing, he painted a target, a bullseye, snapped that. They had great art dealers. These artists had great art dealers and great PR machines that helped sell the work, that helped sell the philosophy of what they were doing, to break away from this modernist style, to try to move forward into an age of advertising. Any of you guys watch Mad Men, the TV show Mad Men? Great show. It's all about advertising and marketing. And let's face it, in my search for self in a consumer culture, it really was all about advertising. Because with advertising, you can try out a different dress, try out a different suit. I've had my hair long, I've had it short, I've had it kind of like this. I mean, I've worn yippie, bippies. I mean, I've tried it all on. Suits, executive, corporate. I mean, I've done it all. And it's sort of external. It's that internal discovery and search. And I'm not sure if I understand pop art, especially we'll talk about Warhol when we get upstairs, enough. Or maybe there's nothing to understand. I'm not sure, But I'd be interested in your thoughts on that when we get up there. Ah, come with me. Minimalism. Minimalism. Okay. What is this? What is that? I. That's what I see. I see the letter I.
Balance.
What's that?
Balance.
Balance, yes. Yeah. Minimalism was the attempt to sort of take away all pretense, all meaning, all abstraction, kind of like this is this. A box with some holes in it, a metal pipe with some lead pipe with a lead thing, graph lines on a white canvas. Minimalism was a way to sort of just take away meaning and stuff. Kind of like meditation. You know, when you meditate, any of you ever meditate? The idea is to clear your head of all thoughts and just be. Being present with no thought. Calm. Minimalism wanted to go after that sort of sense of calm. Being. Because we're all overwhelmed and overloaded with information. We used to get it from TV and radio, now we have to deal with the internet, now we all have smartphones, now we've got, we're Twittered, we're tweeted, we're emailed, we're Facebooked. When do we get to stop? And I think minimalism was a sense of just saying, let's just look at something really simply. And initially, I didn't get this stuff at all. In fact, it kind of upset me because I thought I was being made fun of. Like I'm supposed to go, ooh, profound. Until I saw this work right here. Come with me. Come with me. I first saw it, I thought, looks like the scrap from when I remodeled my bathroom, right? All the wainscoting. I thought this is just a joke, right? I looked inside it. You gotta look inside it. You can't really see. You can see through it though. And it's made out of wood and kind of got some concrete in between it. I read about it. It's a whole page of information on the wall. I read about it, and I was really like trying to figure it out. So here's what it's about. And the problem with it is you don't know what it's about because it's just the box. So, in a sense, until you know what it's about, it doesn't mean anything. And I think this, and I don't know how to bridge that gap, except that you're interesting people, you're interested, you go out and you Google it, or you buy the book and you ask a curator. And this is all about private space. It's all about the space in there. The internal private space, and let's call it you. That safe place in your life that you get to go where everything's okay. When I was studying this stuff, I was living alone. I'd recently been divorced. And when I went from the gallery to a discussion about this box to my house, and I realized when I walked into my house, I was walking into my private space, and that's what this piece was about, because it was a place that I got to go that was safe and quiet and reflective and contemplative. And that's what this piece, I think, is about. It's about the private space that we all have created in our lives and in ourselves. So in a search for identity, that's pretty profound to me.
See, I look at that before you said anything, and I felt claustrophobic. I felt like that was a cage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now how do you feel?
Same thing.
Still a cage?
Yeah,
you don't want to climb in there with me for a private space?
No.
No?
You're on your own.
I'm on my own.
Yeah. And I don't get claustrophobic. I don't have that, but I felt that when it just felt like...
It looked like something in Guantanamo Bay, right?
Yeah,
like a torture device.
Yeah.
Like there should be shackles. Hands would come out and...
Yeah.
What did you get?
Claustrophobic.
Anybody else get the claustrophobic?
Because there is no entrance for you to really physically enter into this piece. So it's symbolically your inner self. So I don't feel claustrophobic looking at this piece. I just felt inside. It's not like I have to physically be in there.
Yeah,
so I'm fine with that.
I see that. I just do that.
Yeah.
Did you feel that before I mentioned it, or did you feel it?
I studied.
Oh, you. You studied.
But this is how.
I love that. I see, I love that. I love that. And that's what art's supposed to be. I think great art creates dialogue.
Yes.
And that's what this is.
I know the handmade is back at the end, but I don't like
it. You don't like
it? I'm like, no. That's funny.
So if it was a nice aluminum and glass box, that you wouldn't be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Different story.
Totally, huh? Okay. All right, cool. Well, mission accomplished on that one. This is another statement. It's a... this is a fluorescent light. Home Depot version. I don't know what to say about it. It's kind of green. It's kind of cool. I mean, it's kind of industrial cool, but I don't know what it means. And it means something. But I think if it means anything to me, it means this is the world we live in. We live in the world of fluorescent lights, pretty much. And by saying, you know, you go to Albertsons and Kroger's, this is the world we live in. We live under these things, they're offices, and they're not, I guess they're not that good for us overall, but anyway, I don't know what to say about it. So this is minimalism, certainly. And then in here, this is all one artist, and there's information about her. It's a woman artist in here. It's art that you get to walk around in, kind of walk through, kind of experience it, kind of look at things, you know, it's sort of, you know, but I don't know what it's about. You know, it's, again, I don't know what it's about. Mm-hmm.
And you will see yourself image in there. And then you will have all these things shooting out like a meteor. It feels like you're the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like a meteor.
Mm-hmm.
Floating forward, leading towards
something. Mm-hmm.
And
It's kind of like an optical illusion. It's kind of got an optical illusion quality to it. But I don't know if that... I mean, that's kind of cool and everything, but maybe it should be in a science museum, you know?
I like it.
Is it art, though?
Sure.
Is it art? Is it art? You like it?
It makes me feel something. I think anything is art that makes you feel something.
What do you feel? What do you feel when you look at this piece?
I feel sparkly.
You feel kind of sparkly?
Yeah,
you're sparkly anyway.
I don't know. You know, like when you were a little kid and you saw stuff that was shiny, made you feel electric. That's kind of, I mean, all the different, I like the textures that she uses. I like it.
I think there should be like a bed here or something that you can lie in. Wouldn't that be nice? And you can really like get into it. Well, thank you. See, and I knew I'd come away from this with somebody else's sense of it, because I don't know. Makes you nervous, like it's gonna come. It's like the bed of nails upside down.
Feels
like rain.
Like, coming down on you.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel.
No fear.
It doesn't feel oppressive now.
Anybody else? It's obviously generating conversation, and I think that's what any good art needs to do.
Crushed silver. Have you seen this crushed silver?
Not yet.
It's not here. Is that
oh.
It's not here.
Oh.
She hangs stuff from the ceiling. Sparkly.
So in that case, you can't see the string.
Right.
And
that's
this is important to seeing the connection of the item to the. Yeah. I think the reflection of the infinite reflection is interesting.
Is it infinite? I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. You start talking about infinity. You start.
Okay. I think if it moves us towards a higher level of sort of understanding, an enlightened position, but I know I've studied it enough to know I have to say everything's art, you know, because, you know.
There is a judgment in that. We're all entitled to judge. We're given permission to judge. We give the viewers permission to judge, the artists do.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious. You said that two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
Questioning, is it art or not? And we all are associated here as volunteers, and we have viewers that come through with exactly that reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's a very negative reaction.
I don't think it's negative.
No,
from some of the people come through, it's not open-minded.
And just for example, that Dan Flavin has made people angry.
Yeah.
I have had more people angry about that light fixture than any piece in this exhibit.
Well, then you say, how would this piece be without light?
Yeah.
It wouldn't exist. It certainly wouldn't exist as it is now.
Right.
But does that make light art? That's what Dan Flavin said. Light is art.
Okay. He said that's his medium. Just like the painter uses paint, he uses light.
Right.
But people get angry with that because they don't... It's difficult to understand.
Well, without his dialogue...
They look at it and say, I can go buy that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is what I would do not art in this world?
Right.
And that's, I'm just, sure, I've had that experience.
I think he has the right idea. I just think he could express it a little more creatively.
He does.
Okay. Yeah, that's
is.
Not, that
well,
was
the whole show of his.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I cried when they took it down.
Oh, okay.
But if you think of light as a combination of all colors.
Yes.
I mean, as a theater person dealing with light, that white light is all colors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about all of those colors. It's about how that light affects everything else it hits.
I agree with the idea of the whole thing behind the light. It was just the fluorescent thing. I was just like, give me something better.
Again, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that's why I asked you why use your reaction to saying that's not art and that's art. Because that's how our...
I usually just ask the question, is it art?
And I didn't interrupt.
Yeah.
Stop.
No.
Instead of,
it is art. It's just forever investigating.
He was
if it ends up in an art museum?
The museum is the place you experience and explore, or, you know, a safe place to do this.
Mm-hmm. Like an art just right? Because it's here.
But yeah, but at the Fort Worth Modern is a different place than me having a show at a gallery. It's different. This gives it a pedigree. This makes it. Doesn't this make it art? If it's here?
Maybe.
But it's all. I learned that art was whatever we really feel it is. That's why we don't put a value on art because the next generation may not like it. So it's whatever we feel a value.
That's right.
The person making the judgment included here may not include me at all. They didn't for centuries.
Yeah.
And it will continue.
And that's what Greg said about that new product telling that everybody thinks is so fun. You're sort of questioning whether it's going to be here in another generation.
I think, you know. My sense is that from an institutional perspective that whatever we define is going to be, continue to be, you know, that.
Because the institution says it is?
Pretty
so
much.
Becomes,
I think so. It becomes institutionalized. I think it becomes institutionalized. And it also I'm sorry?
It does do that, but is that valid? Is that really valid?
Am I saying it's good or bad? No, I'd have to think about that. I'm not sure. Good discussion. See, this is what I go for in school. These are the conversations you want to have. It opens things up, really does. So again, I got nothing. No. What do you like about it?
The textures.
The texture of it?
It's beautiful.
Very calming.
Yeah.
Very calming.
Yeah.
That's not my reaction.
Really?
Very simple.
What do you get?
I don't know, more disruption.
More disruption, huh? Is it like a rainy day on a wet street, maybe, or something? I don't know. See, that's Mr. Representational over here.
It looks like a nice scene on a beach to me, when we've been on the beach late at night, and it's just pitch black.
Oh, like a full...
It's kind of what the sand looks like. It's kind of what the...
Oh!
You know, just pitch black. There's no light to, you know, to bring the light sand.
Uh-huh.
Just,
uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that simple. But.
Right. Huh. Cool. All right. I love it. No, I love it. Okay, I want to go upstairs.
Well,
what's your love time?
Stairs and an elevator. Which?
What would you
like?
Prefer? I want to. Let's go up the elevator.
Okay, there's one back here. If you want,
let's go
use
that one.
It.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Would that fit in the elevator, Mike? We're going upstairs. Yeah. How are we doing on time?
You got about 15 more minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I'm over? It's already been an hour?
Who was the quote that you made by the...
We are walking all the way to the top of the stairs on the second floor so that I can talk about the Andy Warhol painting. Okay. So in my search for identity, my search of self in a consumer society, one of the things that seems to be a part of our quest as a species in a Western culture is to try to figure out who are we within our society and the significance of the individual. And we've seen... Testing, one, two. As we've moved through the Reformation and the Renaissance and the Age of Enlightenment, the growth of the individual, the growth of self. I mentioned downstairs, it used to be that we were the kings and the queens and the pharaohs. They got idolized. They were divine. And then as we've moved into the Age of Reason and Enlightenment, we have people like Descartes saying, I think, therefore I am, taking the power away from the Catholic Church, giving the power to the individual to assess his or her significance or importance. And now the growth of the middle class and the bourgeoisie and trade, there's more a sense of the self, of the importance of the individual. So the individual from the middle class is starting to become more and more significant. And then we start to see portraits of family members. And you know, you've got the Pope's got a picture of the crucifixion or the resurrection with Mary Magdalene and Joseph. And would you mind sticking in a few of my relatives in the background? So there's this sort of greater sense of self and this greater sense of significance. And now we come to the 20th century. We're talking about that in a second. And in the 20th century, we sort of now live in a culture of celebrity, a culture of narcissism, a culture of very much self-aggrandizement, the importance of each individual. We all want to be a rock star. We all want to be superstars. We all want to be famous. This is, I mean, the culture of the music, musicians, we all want to be famous. I don't know why, but that's where we are. And I think Warhol epitomizes a sense of celebrity, the sense of, he was obsessed by celebrity. He was obsessed by Marilyn Monroe. He was obsessed by Elvis Presley. I can't say he was obsessed by Chairman Mao, which is some of my favorite work. If you ever have a chance to see his Chairman Mao silkscreens with the lipstick, brilliant. I mean, he's brilliant because he took things out of their context and deconstructed them and then put them into this whole new context. That's postmodernism. And we're kind of moving through the level of postmodern. We're moving away from the modernist, from the pop, into sort of postmodern. And I think a lot of Warhol stuff is leading us into a very postmodern world. When I see this painting, I see Andy Warhol. It's about him, period. I am Andy Warhol. And by this point, 86, I think, he is Andy Warhol. And if you don't know who Andy Warhol is, you've been living in a cave, probably with you know who. Now, you can read about this painting, and there's all kinds of allegory going on it. This was done a year before he died, and he looks like a skeleton, and it's a death mask. I don't get that. I just get, I'm Andy Warhol. That's what I get. Culture of celebrity, I'm Andy Warhol. That's what I get. So with this whole culture of celebrity, I kind of want to go through here. I want you to sort of begin to see some really, this theme. This is Greg's theme. We'll see if it plays out. How well my argument holds up. This is the photograph by Richard Prince. He took it from a Marlboro advertisement for Marlboro cigarettes, which up until I think the mid-50s, they were trying to market cigarettes, Marlboro cigarettes, to women, and they weren't doing very well. So they came up with this tough guy image. Robert Prince started photographing sections of these bigger magazine articles and magazine advertisements in what's called appropriation, which you can do in art. You can appropriate. He appropriated art as a way of stepping outside of the reality of the advertising, calling it his own. He never got sued. And again, there's this sense of the self. This is an interesting portrait of which looks like Elizabeth Taylor, but it's really not. But it's It's the individual trying on other identities. See, identity is starting to shift. It's becoming very fluid. And that's part of postmodern thinking, is identity is fluid. It's changing all the time. The monolithic authority of the church, the monolithic authority of the institutions is starting to shift. It's starting to be redefined. What's interesting is, if you look closely, it's not Elizabeth Taylor, but it's so iconic because it looks like a scene from the movie she was in, Giant. And if you know anything about the painting, you know that the photograph, it's a man. It's not even a woman, it's a man. So you've got layers and layers of interpretation and meaning that you can take on to that. This is a photograph that has really, it's just a straight photograph. It hasn't been Photoshopped, nothing's been done to it. It's an identity, but who is this? So if I asked you, who is this? Who is this? What's your social economic status?
Middle class.
Middle class?
Housewife, maybe.
Maybe.
Has a job.
What kind of job? Has a job?
Secretarial?
Okay.
I don't know.
All right, that's good. What do you have? What do you got? There's no right or wrong answer here. I'm just curious.
Probably the same kind of thoughts as the middle class person.
Middle class,
maybe a housewife,
secretarial. Okay. All right.